This is Should We Just Watch It Real Quick, the only podcast that after 84 episodes has decided to start with the intro. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Damon Gibson. I didn't go to 112 years of intro school to be called Mr. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the Italian gal, and she'll rip your bloody arms off. It's Kelly Big Whoop. What a fun about it. Festuca, here she is.
I've got two puppies on my lap, and we're just waiting for us. Making sure everything's quiet because mum and dad are working and we don't want anyone to bark at nothing.
Yes. This is one of those situations where Evie, puppy alert. This is one of those situations where Evie has been quiet for an hour and the minute we hit record, a bird will be out the front of our house and she'll go mental.
She's already dropped a dump, a little doggy dumpling at my lap to like, you know. But it's only a little dumpling. Okay, off you go.
Well, let's see how we go. You know what I've realized? First and foremost, we should apologize. We have like a really loyal group of listeners who, no matter how long we're away or how many weeks we don't record an episode, the minute we drop an episode, they download and listen to it. We're really sorry, guys. I have autism. Kelly has ADHD. Sometimes we get to the end of the week and we just can't.
Just no time.
We just can't. Like, even though it sounds like a very simple thing, and it is a simple thing to record a podcast, but like it's just, yeah.
Sometimes you're working Saturdays.
Yeah.
And then I might have a Sunday where I've got to do a little a bunch of family stuff.
Yeah. So or we even actually like try and catch up with a friend, heaven forbid. Like,
heaven forbid. And, you know, it's like the household stuff, you know, banks up.
Yeah. That's Saturdays. The worst thing, right? I think that puts like a lot of I think that gives both of us anxiety that we don't acknowledge or talk about.
I would love to get a cleaner once every 2 weeks.
Both of us have completely different ways of doing things and working. So like I'm the kind of person who I do things in very small steps and Cal will do everything all at the same time. Mm. And then Cal will come along and do something that I was in the middle of doing. And then I get frustrated because I think that she thinks that I'm this lazy prick who's just left something for her to do, which is not the case. I know that it's there and I know that it needs to be done, but we just work, like our brains just work in completely different
ways. Yeah, you think that I'm finishing it because I think you're useless, but then you think that I'm doing it because doing it because I'm like, oh, I can't finish anything.
Well, because I grew up.
She's following. Well, yes. She's fixing everything I do. She's watching everything. Where I'm not. I'm just like, because listen, whether you started it or finishes it, it doesn't matter. It just has to be done.
Because I grew up in a house where that was the case.
Yeah, same.
Where you would be asked to do something and then the minute you started doing it, you are told that it's incorrect.
Yeah, same. We both have a lot of trauma when it comes to cleaning houses.
Oh, so much trauma.
So I think.
So much trauma in this house.
We're not rich people and we have a mortgage and stuff. And I'm going through IVF. So, you know, I am hemorrhaging money. But I have been a very good saver. So whatever. I like that if I can employ someone to, not every week, once every 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
To sweep, mop, clean both bathrooms.
There's a person in your family that could do it.
Yeah, but my brother has a cleaner, so I feel like I might reach out to her and just say, look, if it's $150 for once every 2 weeks and I never have to fucking do it, because even like little bits and pieces like
– cleaning bathrooms.
Yeah, like one fortnight. So I mean, we're not rich and I don't know if we can, you know, budget for a cleaner, but I feel like if it's once every 2 weeks and I don't know how much it is, like if it's $300, obviously not, but I can't imagine, like, it's like, hey, man, we just need you for an hour and a half.
To clean, God, stuff, what are we talking about cleaning on our podcast?
Oh, no, just because I just don't feel like other people have these stuff.
To do two small bathrooms, a kitchen, and our dining area, we wouldn't even need to get them to vacuum or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, if they got the heavy duty vacuums, whatever. And then I just sometimes like when
if you just got someone local, let's say you're paying them $40 an hour, which is actually, by the way, $11 more an hour than I get paid in my job.
But even just like skirting boards, like the skirting boards in the house get really dusty on top. So someone
you just
needs
don't have to worry about.
Well, someone needs to go around and like wipe down all the skirting boards. Like I've done this. I've done this a bunch now, and I don't want to do it again. I scrub the kitchen cabinets because they're white. And bits of coffee drip and da da. Like, I don't know if you notice.
Yeah,
of
course.
They collect.
I feel like I'm always cleaning dust out of, because of the way that the kitchen cabinets are designed, they have like a part that's pressed in. So there's these tiny little ledges.
Like indented, like little doors.
On every single door. And we've got like 15 doors in the kitchen.
So we might need to just get new cabinets.
So I feel like every morning when I'm, like, I can't even enjoy the process of making a coffee, because when I look around the kitchen, because everything's white.
Well, we need to get.
John and Yoko were full of shit, by the way. Having everything white is bullshit.
But it's also because they're indented. The house black. They need to be smooth. We need to have little doors and drawers that are smooth that don't collect bullshit. Because even in Glenroy, it had that. You know what I mean? But then Kensington didn't, and Carson Street didn't. Carson Street didn't even have handles. It had those drawers where you pull it open from the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So there was no like weird dirty handles. Well, maybe that's one thing we have to look at.
I've got a dirty handle you can look after.
But I think, can't you ask cleaners, like, clean the house, and then there's, like, every time they come, they do one side thing that doesn't need to be done every time. So, like, one time I go, can you clean the oven? The next time I'm like, can you dust all the corners of the house?
If you're paying for the cleaner to do it.
Yeah.
Unless you, like, unless they get here and you're like, oh, okay, so today I want you to move the fridge outside, and that, like, that's not happening. But if it's just like,
I'm going to investigate. I'm going to get a quote, because especially the next 2-3 weeks, I don't want to be.
Well, let's talk about this off air, because we've both got different ideas.
Well, my brother also has a carpet cleaner, because a part of me, because of the dogs and that, I actually think it's smart every like 6 months or so to get a professional steam clean.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother has one, so I wonder if.
Well, you heard it here first on our TV and film podcast.
It's going to be fucked.
It's time to dry clean our carpets.
This is all the things that happen. Like, you know, sometimes it's just really hard. That's what she said. Because I've noticed that I can't really do any house stuff. Like, I mean, leaving my coffee cup, you know, in the sink all week. Like, it's really hard for me to clean during the week when I'm working. Like, it's just hard. Like, I have.
I don't really understand how other people do it. I don't.
Yeah.
You go around to other people's houses and everything's immaculate, and you're like, how is this happening? I don't understand.
It's just like, I have a condensed work week as well. So I do longer days to have a day off every fortnight. And that day off is always like, even tomorrow is that day off, and I have a million things planned. You know what I mean? Like, doctor's appointment, all this stuff, right?
Mm.
Anyway, so it's just, by the end of the week, I'm cleaning up everything from that week, and it's like four loads of washing, you know, like it's just the dogs. Like,
also having to move, having moved to the outskirts of Melbourne, like we are just as close to Geelong as we are to Melbourne, where we live. Everything's more of an effort as well. I'm not trying to make you feel bad about moving to Werribee or anything like that. I'm just saying, like, even if, like, a couple of weekends ago I went into Fitzroy to meet up with some mates, and that was great. It was good to see them, Andy and Laura and stuff, if you're listening, hello. But compared to everybody else who was at that table who lived a 15, 20-minute drive away, it took me an hour and 10 minutes to drive into Fitzroy on a Saturday morning, and then an hour to drive. So you're just like, even when you're having days where you're relaxing, there's still
the
anxiety and tension. So like I'm just at the point in my life where like there's so much anxiety like coursing through me that I can't even sit down and enjoy a movie. You know? Like I can't remember the last time I did that.
Well, it's also because there's shit movies out.
No, but I've got a whole library of movies that I love, and I don't, like, I bought a copy of A Hard Day's Night during the week on Blu-ray, and I watched half of it, and then it's just been sitting there.
Because you've been busy. You've been working.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. And then, but then when I do have, like, an hour, it's like, oh, Cal's gone to bed. I've got an hour before I probably pass out. Although that's not even true, because like the minute you go to bed. I like fall asleep on the couch. So like all we've watched is Friends. I haven't watched anything else since the last. It's been a month.
We're also old.
Since we did an episode, and I can't remember if the last episode was about Friends. I think it
probably
was.
Probably, yeah.
So we could probably just do a part two of Friends because we've watched like five.
I mean, you're very sweet when you're watching Friends because you don't remember anything that happened. So there's lots of clutching of pearls moments, like when Monica and Chandler got engaged. You were like, ah, and then when it got revealed that Ross was the father of Rachel's baby, you were like, ah, like that's very cute. But I watched a movie this week.
What?
I watched Weapons, and I thought I watched a movie, Weapons. I thought it was Jordan Peele, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Yeah, it was another guy. I'll look it up. And it's a, you know, it's one of those blah, blah, blah horror films, blah, blah, blah. I thought it was really good. Like, I thought it was very so unique, so different. Mm-hmm. And the way that they tell the story, it's like it's the story from this person and then this person, this person. So it's, everything starts the same. And now it's through her eyes, through the kid's eyes, through this guy's eyes, and how everything gets to this, you know, particular end. Mm. So directed, written, produced, co-scored by Zach Cregger. And he, founding member of the comedy troupe, The Whitest Kids You'll Know, starred in sitcoms Friends with Benefits.
Did you say The Whitest Kids You Know?
Yeah.
Oh, I love, yeah, those guys are great.
Yeah, so that's him. So he's a comedian. Comedian, actor, writer, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, good on him. And he's been directing stuff for a while, Barbarian, Companion, Weapons, Resident Evil. I mean, the fact that he wrote it and composed the music in it, which when I think about the score in it, like it's very, you know, like I was like, oh. He was in The Death and Return of Superman, or was it a short film? Acting roles, television. Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard of The Whitest Kids You Know. Oh, but then acting roles, it's like Homicide, Life on the Street, Friends with Benefits, Wrecked, Adam Ruins Everything. I remember that show. Just Roll With It. I was friends with him back in New York. So funny that there was a guy that I was dating that hated Adam Conover. Mm. And I Adam was always lovely. Like he was always like, hey, how are you? How's it going?
Yeah.
You know, in the open mic scene. And then, yeah, there's a guy that I was dating where he's just like, fuck, I hate him so much. And you could tell that Adam hated him.
Yeah, right.
Like it was a mutual respect of hate, which is good. Anyway.
So what did you like about Weapons so much?
So.
Is it Weapon or Weapon?
Weapons. So basically it's the story of a.
Of a lovely lady.
Yeah. So basically there's a young teacher. It's the chick, Julia. I love Julia Gardner. I just think she's so good. Like when she did that Inventing Anna, like she'd already was doing Ozark, so she already was like somebody and stuff. Mm. But this, goddamn, man, there's just something about when I see her, I just like I just think of the Anna voice where she's like, you know, I don't have time for you.
What's it for? What is this?
Inventing Anna was like a really big series that came out a few years ago about the true story about the socialite, the German socialite that stooged people of billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah. I remember
I don't have
that.
Time for you. Anyway, so she's in it. She's fantastic. I just find her really good. She's really easy to watch, and I just find her to be really great. Josh Brolin's also in it. Another tick. I find him to be, yeah, you know what I mean? Like I feel like some actors when you watch
them. Thanos.
Some actors when you watch them in a film, you go, I feel safe. Mm. I feel like you're going to make the right decisions. You're going to know what's going on. Yeah. So basically she's a school teacher in this town, and one day she goes to school and only one child is in the class. All of the other kids are not there. And then the news story breaks out that all those kids are missing. And at 2:30 in the morning, they, through like people's Ring cams and that, all these kids just ran out of their house with their arms on, by their side. You've probably seen those commercials where they like, they just run out of the house like zombies. All these kids. Right. So everyone's like, the town meeting, what happened? She knows something. She's like, I love these kids. I don't know anything. They interviewed the little boy. He's like, that was there. Like, nothing happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I don't know. And then, so basically we're trying to figure out what the fuck happened.
Right.
Like, where are they? No one can find them. They've disappeared.
Yeah. But so what happens next?
Well, why the fuck did all of them disappear? Like, yeah. At the same time, but also in some zombie state.
So what's the deal with the creepy Joker lady that I've seen?
Right. So we start, so everything's, you know, kind of blah, blah, blah. And then finally we get the kid's point of view of what's happening. Little boy. And, you know, his parents are like, you know, because it's like one scene where the teacher looks through the window of that boy's house and sees the mum and dad just sitting on the couch staring into nothing. Like they're zombies.
Yeah.
And then, so anyway, so we get the kids thing and the mum and dad are like, you know, oh, you're getting ready for school. Like, everything's normal. And then they're like, the mum's aunt, the mum's auntie is coming to visit, or like a great auntie, and that's the weird clown lady. Right. She's coming to visit, and then when she comes to visit, things start going weird. So it's hard to describe. It's hard to describe. Like, I don't know. Are we doing spoilers?
Yeah.
You should watch it though. I think you should watch it. I think, like, if it's gory, you can just turn away or put on mute like I do with Charlotte, because I think that it's very good filmmaking. I think it's really. I said the same thing to Celia yesterday.
Anxiety disorder.
Like. Shut up. Listen, I said the same thing to Celia yesterday because both of you two, respectfully, don't like horror films. No big whoop. That's fine. But it's very well made, and I'd rather, like, tell you when something gory is happening. Not much gory. Anyway. Yeah, so she's basically, we don't know what she is, and that's what I love. You don't have to, like, nothing has to be explained, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't overly. Have to be overly explained.
Yeah, like, I don't know what she is. She's not a demon. She's not a witch.
Yeah.
She's a weird something.
Right.
Basically, and they don't explain it, but. The whole thing is that she's not feeling well. She's not feeling well. And all of a sudden, the parents turn into zombies and she feels better.
Right.
Right? So.
Who's this? Who?
What do you mean?
Who's feeling sick? The old lady?
Yeah.
Right. How old is she? Would her parents turn into zombies?
But, like, they don't look like zombies. All of a sudden, they're just sitting on the couch staring into nothing. And they're not speaking.
Right.
Right? And then, so like when she turned up, she didn't have any hair. And then all of a sudden her hair's grown back.
Right.
Like almost like she's using people to rejuvenate herself.
Right.
In some weird exorcist thing. We don't know. You know what I mean? It's never really explained. But we get enough information where we go, huh. And then she's like, then her hair starts falling out. And she's like, to the little boy, she's like, I need you to help me. Basically meaning she needs people. So she takes the kids.
Right.
And then she's got hair and she's moving around. She's got a lot of energy. You know what I mean? And the kids are just, well, these are massive spoilers, people. And then the kids are just zombies now in the basement of the house. They're just staring, nothing. And this little boy has to feed everybody. So the little boy has to like, feed everyone soup. But what's so crazy about it?
Shut up, everyone.
But what's so crazy about it is that this woman, the reason why the movie's called Weapons is because that's what they are. Right? They're weapons. Because this woman has control over them.
Right.
So the way she can manipulate these people, like just stuff like the kid's not a zombie because she needs someone to do stuff. So the kid, she will be like, I need you to go shopping. I need you to do this. And she can only do whatever she does. She can only do if she has something of theirs to do the thing in the bowl that she does to like create her weapon. And then so the kid had to collect something from every kid in the class, whatever. And then, so one of the things that she does to scare that little boy into not talking about what he knows is that, like, and this is where goriness is in, where she's like, you know, she makes the parents, because she's like, I want you to look at this. And then she, like, snaps her fingers or whatever, and both the mum and dad get a fork and just start stabbing their face, just stabbing, 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 and they're, like, not even flinching, like, just annihilating their faces. And he's like, stop, 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 you're hurting them, you're hurting them. And then she's like, so this is what's going to happen if you tell anyone I'm here. You know what I mean? Like, so there's all that sort of stuff. So she, they're weapons. The weapons are the people that she makes into zombies. And then it's basically one of the dads, Josh Brolin, and the teacher, they come together and try and figure out what the fuck's going on. Mm. There is some gory stuff, but I just found it such a unique storyline. Like, the fact that, yeah, like, because when I thought weapons, I was like, oh, well, she's going to use these kids to, like, you know, go around and kill people, but she doesn't. She uses them to, I don't know what it is. Like, maybe it's something I missed, but I don't think so. Like, she just sucks the life out of them and makes them zombies, but then they do whatever she wants, you know? But, and then people, they're like, but, and it's like, but they're so, when she snaps the fingers, or it's more about she puts it, like, she breaks a stick and puts it in a bowl or whatever. It's like this weird thing. When she does it, they don't stop. Like, whatever she makes people do, it won't stop until they're dead. It's horrific.
Yeah.
But I don't know, just the way they told the story from here to here and then putting all the dots together, because you'd get, like, you know, like, someone's story, like the girl, when the girl was telling her story, it ended with, like, her principal being a zombie and attacking her, and he was relentless until someone accidentally ran him over with a car. And then the dad saw it, and that's when they got together, because he's like, what the fuck was that? She's like, I don't know. She goes, I talked to him on the phone 20 minutes ago saying we should do a welfare check on that little boy's house.
Mm.
Right? Like, just stuff like that. But then when you go and do the principal story, you find out what happened and why he went feral.
Right.
Anyway, very good storytelling. Like, I actually couldn't fault it. And if anything, I feel like there's a really unique part to do another one. You know what I mean? Like, there's questions are opened and stuff like that. I would probably give it 5 grumps.
5 grumps?
I thought it was. Holy shit. I thought it was. And if I compare it to the Jordan Peele ones, you know, like Nope was really good. But even then, I'd only give that 4. The Alien one was pretty good. I'm sure, what else was there? Nope.
I don't know. I haven't watched any of them.
Oh, there was Nope was the Alien one, and then the Click one, the No Name one with Allison.
I haven't watched any of them.
Anyway, what did you watch?
Well, if we're doing films that we watched on our own, I didn't realize that was something we could
do.
Oh,
no. I'm sorry. That's not what we're doing. We're doing whatever we watched. So if you watched a movie, we watched a movie.
Yeah, all right.
If you watched a TV show. No, because you said I didn't realize we were doing movies. No, I would.
I watched Will and Harper, documentary.
Oh, yeah.
About a writer from SNL.
Is that on Plex?
Yeah. I can't remember the writer's name, the dead name. I probably shouldn't use it anyway. Harper, who basically did a lot of writing with Will Ferrell, which was also kind of interesting because I'd always – the narrative coming out of SNL – we always end up talking about SNL on this podcast, is that Adam McKay and Will Ferrell were a team. Mm. But they weren't. This woman, Harper, wrote a lot of Will Ferrell's sketches with Will. And supposedly when Will first got to SNL, most people in the cast and a lot of the writers didn't think he was funny at all. And Harper was like, no, this guy's hilarious. You just got to find the right things for him to do. But anyway, Harper transitioned, and before she had transitioned, she was like a pretty blokey bloke, and we'd go on road trips from New York to LA and back again. And she loved them, and she loved being able to go to like truck stops and dive bars and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, I'm listening.
What are you doing?
I'm looking up the movie you're talking about.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, so they go on road trips.
Yeah, so the whole thing is that she's terrified of doing the thing that she loved the most, which was traveling across the States for obvious reasons. She's a 60-year-old woman who's transitioned in Trump's America and doesn't feel safe to do the thing that she loves. So she calls Will and asks Will if he will go on this road trip. Or maybe it was Will's idea. I can't remember. It's right at the beginning of the road trip. But anyway, it is a it starts and ends in a really lovely kind of meditation on friendship and, like, you know, that, like, if people change, it doesn't mean that a friendship has to. You've just got to, like, give and take a little bit. But there's some, like, really sad moments. They, you know, Harper's not stupid and sort of keeps bringing up the fact that, like, she knows that this is a different experience doing it with Will Ferrell. And that's why she wanted to kind of do this, because she would be protected by his fame somewhat. But
that's really sad.
Yeah. But by the end, she's sort of saying, like, I feel like I could do this on my own and it would be okay. And in most places they go to, she is kind of fine. Like, and they do go out of their way to go to like 3 or 4 different bars that are like, you know, when they drive up into the car park, there's like big pickup trucks with like Trump flags off the back and all this kind of stuff to just see what happens. Me as a viewer watching that, I was like, I don't think this is necessary. I don't think you need to put Harper in harm's way to make a point. You know what I mean? But for the most part, in those bars, people, not everybody, obviously, but there were people in those bars who would come over and talk. I think a lot of the time because they wanted to speak to Will Ferrell. But, you know, by the end of the conversations, they would be open, more open to Harper. You know, it was quite sort of like, it was nice to see.
Yeah.
The one place where they absolutely felt unsafe was they went to a like steak bar in Texas. I can't remember which city in Texas it was, whether it was Dallas Austin. Or Houston. It wasn't Austin. I can't remember exactly where it was. But essentially, as a joke, Will Ferrell showed up in his Sherlock Holmes costume from the film Sherlock Holmes just to be like, you're dining with the great detective Sherlock Holmes. And like, it's this insane thing because the waiter's rude to them, like keeps calling Harper a man. You know, and like I feel like the filmmakers build it up a little bit. There is definitely a vibe in the room of everybody is watching them and it's not cool. I don't think anyone was in any danger of like getting hurt or anything like that. But anyway, that aside, I mean, the stuff that like, in between Harper realizing that she wanted to transition and actually transitioning, she bought a house like on the outskirts of like in the desert of California, like in this
New Mexico.
Yeah, like in this like terrible like industrial town that was like just riddled with like crime and shit, where she would go to dress up like to be a woman. Without anyone knowing, but then their neighbors and stuff would know. So, like, when Harper would go to do work, she would come back and, like, the windows had been smashed in or, like, you know, it had been graffitied with, like, horrible slurs and stuff like that. But, yeah, there's just a lot of, like, I think, like, you know, as a straight dude watching this, there was still stuff that I was learning about the trans experience that I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah. And like, I consider myself an ally. Absolutely. But, you know, it was because there was a part of me that was like, well, you know, what am I like? I'm a pretty fucking hip woke dude. Like, what am I going to get out of this? You know, but I did actually, there was quite a bit of like, just even if it's just for an hour and a half of a film watching experience, putting yourself in someone else's shoes, even if they are probably more privileged than most people transitioning, right? And she talks about that as well. She's like, I've got money and a little bit of fame, and so like I'm pretty cool. And but there's it's not a drag for an hour and a half. It's a very optimistic film. Right at the beginning, Will and Harper have dinner with Harper's kids, and they're just like the best kids. They're like 18 and 15. And they're just awesome because they're so of that
progressive.
Yeah, they're of that generation. And so they're like, well, we're not worried about our dad transitioning. We're just worried about him going to like they say red states without saying it. You know what I mean?
It's like a real divide of like 15, 18-year-old kids who are just like really like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like respectful and like because they've grown up in this world of like, yeah, ma'am, you're gender fluid, blah, blah, blah.
It's but environmental. It's absolutely environmental, which is why there's such a push from the dying – here we go. This is my fucking Rick the People's Poet rant for the podcast. But it's why the dying patriarchy are trying so hard to muzzle people talking to each other. Because when people get on social media and show each other, that's what happened with the Palestine genocide in the last 2 years. People could get online and show people what was actually happening rather than these people controlling the narrative and saying, yeah, Israel's good. It's fine. Everyone can do whatever. You know, don't worry about it. Israel's all good. And it's the same thing with this stuff. When people are online and sharing their experiences with people, then people are more empathetic towards people who are transitioning and stuff. But like in this country, for example, in December, sorry, guys, Jim's got a ball in his mouth for some reason. He hasn't played with a ball for like weeks and now has decided he's going to play with it. We're going to have social media ban for people 16 and under from December, and it's all about trying to control people's voice. That's all it is. And we live in a country where, I mean, we're in a bubble because we're two artists who grew up in, you know, Kelly was living in New York, but I was living in inner city Melbourne. And so I think we think that the way we think about things is pretty mainstream, but it's not. It's not, especially in this country. It's one of the most conservative countries I've ever been to. And so I think films like this still... That was what I walked away from with this film. It's like, it's important that these films are made. It's important that people tell their stories like this because you don't know how many people's minds it's going to change. Even if it just gives people pause to have thought about that experience and be more open to it. It definitely did that for me. And I was also like, I mean, not that you would expect anything less from a friend, but I was really, really impressed with Will Ferrell in this film. Like, it's sort of difficult to talk about, right? Because you don't want to give him a medal for being just a good human and doing the bare minimum of, like, being a friend for someone who's transitioned. But he was so, like, he was so easy around the whole situation. And it must have put Harper at ease so much, you know, like it was a really beautiful thing to see in a friendship. I won't go through each individual thing because it's boring podcasting and you'll want to watch the film. I would definitely recommend watching it. Is it the best documentary I've ever seen? No, but I think it's an important story to tell. I'll give it 4 grumps.
I think I'll watch it. I just don't know. I don't want to watch anything that brings me down. It's either got to be fun.
It is a lot. I probably haven't stated that enough. There's a lot of fun bits. For every time there is a bit where you're like, oh, there's like 10 minutes of fun, you know? And there's a lot of ex-SNL alumni in the film that pop up along the way where you're like, oh, cool. Should I spoil that or just let people discover as they go along?
I mean, I spoiled a movie.
Kristen Wiig's in it, Will Forte, Seth Meyers, John Mulaney, Tim Meadows, whole range of SNL people pop up throughout the film. So if you're an SNL fan, which if you listen to this podcast, you probably are because it ends up being all we talk about, you should watch this documentary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we talk about the 3 minutes of the latest SNL season that we watched and turned off?
Why bother?
Literally some of the worst TV we ever watched. Just to close on Friends, I just want to give a Friends update because we've watched like 5 seasons of it.
Yeah, Rachel's pregnant.
We're up to the point where Rachel is pregnant. We found out that Ross is the dad. Monica and Chandler got married. Monica has turned into a bit of a monster ever since she got married, which is annoying because Monica was cool and I liked Monica, and now they're like sort of portraying her as this like ball and chain wife who whips Chandler. Like, I don't like that dynamic. Like, they were friends and that was what was cool about the relationship. Anyway, I suppose what I want to say is I can't believe, like, there are moments where Rachel is selfish and I'm like, oh, God, she's such a prissy princess. But that is kind of
her thing.
Her personality.
Yeah.
And she's not evil. It's just like she has a selfish streak. Ross is
diabolical.
It's crazy. The longer we go along in this season, he tried to fuck his cousin. This is something no one ever talks about in Friends. He tried to fuck his cousin, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I bring it up with you, you're like, yeah, Ross tried to fuck his cousin. It's like, why are you not upset about this? No one mentions it in the show, right? Like, it just everyone finds out about it, but no one mentions it. His parents aren't upset about it. Monica's not upset about it, right? His friends aren't like, should we maybe stop hanging out with Ross? He's like, tried to fuck his cousin. First cousin, by the way, not second or third.
Mm. It was Denise Richards, but still.
So what? Who cares? He fucked one of his students. Dated one of his students for a long period of time.
Mm.
Like some real gross, diabolical behavior. Sucks. Even just in the last couple of episodes we watched, he's trying to date this girl that he met at Chandler and Monica's wedding. And to be fair, Rachel did do the same thing. But like, he's been dating her and hasn't told her that he got Rachel pregnant.
Yeah, you...
And then she finds out from Phoebe? Is that...
Yeah,
listen. No, she finds out because Rachel's dad comes around to, like, yell at him. Yeah. But...
I mean, you're a normal person that identifies this as being shit, but this is men. This is just generally dudes. This is what they do. You're not like that, so you can't...
But Joey and Chandler don't do this stuff. Even in the Friends universe, you know, like, and Joey's a womanizing guy. He's sleeping with a different girl every week.
Yeah, but maybe that's the thing because people like you, you're more that Chandler that go, nah, that's a bit weird. But also, Chandler pretended to go to Yemen to get away from a woman because he didn't have the balls just to break up with her.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's not cool, but it, like, I don't think that's anywhere near as bad as any of the shit Ross has done.
No. And I think that there are a lot of – it's not outlandish. There's a lot of dudes out there that are Ross, and you just don't identify with it because you're a normal person who cares and has empathy, and there's many, you know, men like you out there. But Ross, the way that he is, the way that he gaslights women, yeah. That guy is...
It's crazy.
That guy is every fourth guy,
so
I think.
It's so blatant. So blatant, and I don't see any discourse with it. Like, Ross should be one of the biggest villains in TV history. Like, he should be... Yeah. What are some of the other biggest villains in TV shows?
Lex Luthor.
Yeah, okay. Walter from Breaking Bad, even though he's the hero, he ends up
Amanda
being the bad guy.
Amanda from Melrose Place.
Amanda from Melrose Place. What are some of the biggest TV shows of all time?
Sopranos. I would say Full Leotardo. is a pretty big villain.
I think Tiny's the villain in that show.
Richie's a pretty... No. Phil Lotardo's the bad guy.
They're all bad guys in that show. Swearegen in Deadwood.
I never watched Deadwood.
Mate, Deadwood. God, it's so good.
Maybe. I mean, the thing is, like, Harry, like, from Mad Men, Harry's probably more like Ross, where he's just, just sniveling, you know, pretends he's the good guy, but he's not, you know. Mm. He's a piece of garbage. I mean, it starts off that Pete Campbell is the garbage guy, but he really starts redeeming himself as the season. I mean, he's still a piece of garbage, but as we get to, like, the last season and that, he really turns it around.
Ross is a Seinfeld character. It's like he's wandered in from the Seinfeld New York into Friends. Friends is this, like...
Yeah, he's like George.
Lollipops, yeah, he's the gaslighting Lollipops of Sunshine George. World, but, like, Ross has somehow crossed over from...
But then he, like, comes out and, like, you know, buys Phoebe a bike because she never had a bike growing up and tries to, you know, teach her how to bike, puts training wheels
That's
on.
That's one nice thing he's done in – we're up to season eight. In 8 years, he's done one nice thing.
No, he did the nice thing where he broke up with Rachel when she had broken ribs and he was supposed to go to this – be on TV. And then he stayed with Rachel, helped her get ready and stuff, you know, took her to the hospital.
That's because he wanted to get back together with her. But, okay, no. I'll give you that. That's two. It's 2 in 8 years.
He was gonna take Rachel to the prom.
Yeah, okay, that was before the show started, but all right, I'll give you that. That's three.
He's a good dad to his son. Mm. And is managing co-parenting with his lesbian ex. I mean, there's parts of him that are good, but inherently he's a selfish cunt.
Oh, mate. The crazy thing about Ross, Bob, is that Joey is a character on that show and Ross is so, like, over the top,
yeah,
gross and awful in almost everything that he does, is he makes Joey look lovable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Joey's fucking girls and dumping them. He won't call them. All he does is eat and drink. Mm. You know what I mean? You're like, ah, Joey.
I hate him.
It's fucking mental. Anyway, it's a great show, Friends. Love it. Five grumps. I've actually loved watching Friends with you this time, baby.
I mean,
it's fine. Whatever. You know,
it does have.
Don't
a
get
few.
Too fucking emotional about it, you pussy.
Sometimes it just shows it's from the 90s. You know, like they.
There's so much gay panic.
The gay panic is my biggest problem with Friends. I can enjoy it, and when I see gay panic, I acknowledge it and go, ugh, idiots. But that's the only thing that really bothers me about it is just this, like, fake gay panic. You know, like, poor, you know, so what? He's a bloody Chandler gets gifted a nice gold bracelet, and he just thinks it's, like, gay.
Freaks out about it.
Freaks out about the
stuff about his dad, like, the fact that his dad has transitioned is kind of, like, cool for a show made in the late 90s. Mm. But then, like, just the constant fucking jokes about it. And even Chandler as a guy being like, my dad is a woman. Like.
Yeah.
In a way, it kind of does show for some of us how far people have come.
Also how.
You know, with attitudes towards things of, like, that's not funny, man.
Friends,
like,
was pretty. I guess progressive at the time, but also how far we have come.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, good times, great classic hits.
All right, I need to go to the toilet. Time to end.
Well, you know what we say. Yep. When it's time for Callie to potty, it's time to end the potty. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We're getting a lot of, like, five-star reviews when we ask for them, so I appreciate that. It will get us out to more people. We will try and be more disciplined with putting out episodes, but when you've got a couple of neurodivergent people running a podcast, this is what can happen. So we apologize. Thanks for listening. We love you very much.
Love you very much.
We'll talk to you on the next episode.
Thank you so much, everybody. We love you. Love you.